Okay, where to start? You're listening to the Deceptionists podcast. Wait. You're listening to the amazing sounds of the Deceptionists. Yeah, that's better. On this episode, Caroline, Jim, Kelly, and Dave talk about NaNoWriMo. Wait, National Novel Writing Month. Yeah. Also, Dave tells you, our fantastic listening audience, about the Kickstarter project he's involved with for his upcoming comic book. Yeah. All right, okay, now we just throw this in the word count and. Oh man! Are you kidding me? This is hard!
My time to you, hoping you'll come through too. Hello and welcome to The Deceptionist Truth Through Fiction. We are your fortnightly or so creative writing podcast that tries to bring a sense of community to the solitary art of the writer. I'm David Ocampo and I'm joined by my Deceptionist co-hosts. I've got Caroline Pruitt.
Hello.
Jim Rochkowski.
Hello, world.
And Kelly Stevenson.
Hi there.
And tonight we are going to talk about National Novel Writing Month. This was a topic that we talked about between us, but then we also put it out to Twitter, and there seemed to be a lot of interest there. So NaNoWriMo, or NaNoWriMo, as Kelly says, but I don't. I'm just going to get that out of the way now because I'm not going to say it her way, and you know I'm not going to ask her to say it my way.
But we're that's what
I think I'm the
about.
Only person who says it my way.
We're going to say it
because
that
I'm different than everyone else.
But we're going to pick teams, 15 minutes for each side, followed by a 5-minute rebuttal by the opposing team.
About pronunciation.
Yes.
Yes. And that nothing is, else. That is tonight's show. Then we'll have a separate show where we actually talk about National Novel Writing Month.
Right.
No. We're referring to the same thing. I just want our listeners to know. But before we get started with that, I want to take a little bit of time. My fellow co-hosts here have graciously allowed me to grab the mic for a minute and to talk about something that I'm working on that I need help with. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about that first. If you've you may have seen it if you listen to any of my other podcasts or you know follow me on the web or anything like that. But I have just launched a Kickstarter fundraising campaign with my co-writer Jeremy Rogers and our artist Jared Souza for a comic book that we're producing with Hermes Press. This is, I've talked about it briefly on this show before, but the announcements have officially gone out now. So the deal is that we are working with a publisher, Hermes Press, and they're going to publish Sparrow and Crow, The Demoniac of Los Angeles, which is a 5-issue comic book miniseries. It's going to come out starting in spring of 2012. And, it is using the characters of Dr. Xander Crow and his assistant, his partner, Sparrow, who are sort of occult detectives. Xander Crow is from, they're both characters from the Wormwood show that I've talked about on this show before, our audio drama series. But they're really characters that I've written a lot about and that have just, we have so many stories to tell with them that Jeremy and I always were interested in doing something else in a different medium. And at a certain point, this artist, Jared, came to us as a fan of the show and said, hey, you know, I'm interested in adapting Wormwood into a comic. What do you guys think about that? He knew we were comics fans and so thought that was an interesting idea. So we sat down and we talked with him and we realized that, you know, we didn't just want to adapt the Wormwood show. We actually wanted to come up with something original. And, right before Wormwood starts, it has to do with Xander Crowe is this sort of washed up exorcist. He used to be a psychologist until something really bad happened to him. And he learned about, you know, true evil that was in this world. And so now he's sort of this down and out occult detective who's, you know, scraping together a living doing seances and exorcisms in Los Angeles. And when we start the show, he has just... His last job was trying to perform an exorcism on the daughter of a Los Angeles mob boss. But then we quickly take him out of there and take him to the small town of Wormwood, but we never, and we talk around this story, but we never quite tell it. And so Jeremy and I finally sat down and decided to tell that particular story, which is sort of a, if you like sort of creepy occult mystery horror stories, this is sort of like, I like to think, I call it, if Raymond Chandler wrote The Exorcist and then Brian De Palma turned it into a movie, it would be something like this. You know, it's kind of got this weird 70s vibe to it, but it is set present day. So Hermes Press saw this. They really liked the art. They really liked the idea. They actually want to make it part of their original comics line. Hermes Press is mostly known for doing... reprint books of like the Phantom comic strips from the newspapers, stuff like that. But they have a really great production staff and everything, and they make really great looking books. So they saw our stuff and they were really interested in sort of using us to launch this original comics platform. So we're going to be the first comic book that they produce. Within that, it's kind of like us taking it to Image Comics or somewhere else where, you know, there's still a lot that Jeremy and Jared and I have to do. You know, the comics market is a tricky market. So, you know, at the top of this, I said that we started a Kickstarter campaign, and that is, you know, what we're working on right now. A Kickstarter campaign, for those of you that don't know, is a fundraising campaign. You set a fundraising goal, and if you raise all that money online from participants, you get that money. If you don't meet the goal, you don't get the money. So we've set up a $4,000 goal to help us with production and marketing costs, you know, associated with this book. And we've actually created a website, sparrowandcrowe.com. That's Crowe with an E at the end of it. So it's C-R-O-W-E. sparrowandcrowe.com. You can see stuff about the story, about the book itself. We have some sample pages up, and then we have links to the Kickstarter campaign there, where we put together a video where we talk about, you know, what we want to do with the story, why we're bringing it to you, what we need help with, and all that kind of stuff. And if you do go to the Kickstarter campaign, there are all sorts of rewards. This isn't just us saying, hey, give us your money because we want to make a comic book. There is, you know, you get a signed copy of the book. There are art prints that we're producing. Hermes Press has actually donated some of their books to our cause, so we have them set at different pledge levels where you can get one of these books or a set of these books. So there's stuff all along the way. There's signed scripts, there's sketches. We're actually giving away with these pledges pages of the first issue, or original artwork pages. So if you're a collector of comic art, these pages done by Jared Souza are watercolor, and they look great. I've seen the originals and they look fantastic. So it's kind of something great that you could hang on your wall. And at certain levels, like I said, he's also doing sketches and stuff like that. So we are for the next, I think now it's the next 42 days, or by the time this comes out, it'll probably be about 40 days. We're running this campaign to try and raise that money. As I'm speaking now, as we're recording this, I think we're at about $1,300, $1,350. And that's just after about 3 days. So, you know, I'm really excited and I hope we can meet the goal, but I definitely need help. So, you know, we'll get right into the deceptionist stuff right now, but I wanted to talk about that because that's something it's something I'm very excited about, something I've been working on for a long time. And, you know, here at the deceptionist, we're always talking about the craft and the writing, but, it just so happens that in this day and age, writing isn't just the actual craft itself, but all the stuff you have to do to get your stuff out there. And I think, you know, I was talking with Jim and Caroline about this before we jumped on the call, but in this day and age, more than ever, people can kind of put their own stuff out there. you know, through lots of different means. And so I really love that about this age that we live in, that, you know, we can go out there and, you know, do this sort of fundraising thing, and then we can get a comic deal and we can publish this and, you know, do it all ourselves. But, you know, the fact is that we do need support. We do need help. So, yeah, check that out, sparrowandcrow.com. There's links there to the Kickstarter campaign. I think that's all I want to talk about with that.
Have we linked to it on the Deceptionist website yet?
By the time this show goes up, we will have a link to it. I'll probably put a link in the show notes, and I will probably put a separate post up as well.
That's just some good old-fashioned cross-promotion.
Yeah, it sure is.
It's like we do this for a living.
Yeah. So I definitely, you know, need everyone's help that I can get with that. I think it's a great story. I think if you guys like what I talk about on this show or what we've read on this show, I mean, you know, I really like doing this as a comic because it is sort of like this horror comic, but it's also a mystery. It's got this sort of hard-boiled, this sort of noirish edge to it. And it's something that I think works really well in comics. And I know a lot of our listeners are comics fans because we do get a lot of comments about comics and stuff. And, you know, I know that a lot of comics fans are very used to this sort of genre mashup. So we just came from talking about genres on our last set of shows. And, you know, we talked about horror and we talked about crime, but, you know, comics is one place where I think folks really get away with a lot. They're able to mash these together and do some really interesting things. And so, you know, I'm really hoping that we can do this with this one.
Well, best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Making something.
So we'll definitely talk about that later as we get into it, you know, get into the actual production of it and stuff. I think that's a worthwhile discussion, but let's talk about National Novel Writing Month. So November is the yearly date for National Novel Writing Month. The idea here, and you guys can jump in at any time if I get this wrong, because I'm kind of, you know, just going by the seat of my pants here, which is kind of what NaNoWriMo is all about for me. but we'll get to that. National Novel Writing Month, the idea is to write a 50,000-word novel in 1 month. That equates to roughly 1,500 words a day. And the basic idea behind this is that everyone talks about writing, but they always things come up, you know, I forgot to do this, you know, I got to take the dog to the vet, I didn't stop at the grocery, I'm just tired today and I want to watch Jersey Shore, you know, whatever it is, you know, you find excuses not to write. And so the idea is, if you join this group, it's like training for a marathon, and running that marathon, you're not doing it alone, you're with a group of people, you're competing with each other in a way, you know, cheering each other along, and really you're just focusing on, hey, all I have to do is get 1,500 words a day, and that's not that hard. And and if you can do that, then at the end of it, you have not a finished novel, but a rough draft of a novel. And would that be fair to say, guys?
If you're lucky.
The goal is to have a complete story, right? I mean, you're not supposed to just leave at 50,000 words and say, and then ... and not finish it.
Yeah.
You're supposed to complete the draft, but the idea is that it's not a finished draft. You mm-hmm. still have to do the work of rewriting, which I want to talk about, because that's, you know, that can be a very hard thing as well. But that's the idea, and that's the goal with it, is that you come away with this. So I guess maybe we should just talk about our history with NaNoWriMo. Caroline, you want to start with that one?
Last year is the first year that I actually sat down and tried to do it in any kind of intensive way. I've been aware of it probably, I think it's, I'm not, someone will have to tell me how long it's been around, but it first really started getting attention in the sort of mid-2000s. I was in graduate school for creative writing at the time. And so it was sort of something that some of us were like, well, wait a minute. And I was actually on a fellowship, so I really wasn't supposed to be doing anything else. So I was like, you know, I could sit down and write a novel in a month, since that's what I'm in school for. did not last very long. You know, because I was going to classes and such as that. But also I think I didn't really like just something about the idea I approached with some skepticism at the time, because I think I was being a little bit delicate about it, which, I mean, in a sense, because I was writing a thesis for a English program, and I did want what I was going to, you know, be turning in like 6 months from then to be good. So I think I wasn't really in a position where I really had the luxury to write the crappy words, because I needed to put something that was going to be my final capstone at that point. But I was kind of sort of became aware of it. And then when I was out of school, I started to you know, move on in life, I knew fewer people who were creative writing graduate students. I knew more people who were doing other things. And that was when I kind of got exposed to a larger cross-section of people who were doing this. And then I think it was actually you guys, or at least Kelly and Jim at the time on Murmur were talking about it, I think 2 years ago. And so that kind of...
Delightful civil exchange of ideas.
It was a wonder, and we thought we would revisit that. So, I'm talking about all the years I haven't done it, I guess. But then last year, I actually sat down with it. I got about halfway through. I mean, I think I had about 20,000 words, which both of the pieces that I've read on this show sort of come out of that, but it's not something I've gone back to as a longer work. But then on the other hand, it's kind of like, I feel like I spent enough time on it to kind of know there's probably not a novel in this. So, is that
tough to realize to get 20,000 words in and go, oh man.
Well, I think
I took the wrong road.
The fact that you're like, it's 30 days and you're done either way. You're done with the commitment. Actually, I think it made it a lot easier than, if I had been in the middle of my thesis and been like,
right.
That's a great point. Yeah.
So, I mean, in a sense, particularly last year with the first year I really tried to do it, the fact of it feeling a little bit disposable, I was actually able to use as an asset, I think, because it was permission to experiment with it. So I've talked enough about my non-success at this, and I'll let other people comment.
I do see quickly that the project originally started in 1999. I didn't know it had been around that long. Just 21 people in 1999. They said by 2000, this is just Wikipedia, over 200,000 people took part. So
I think
that's pretty great.
It would have been 2004.
Not by 2000, by 2010.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It said by the 2000... 10 event, over 200,000 people took part. Yeah.
So that's 11 years.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry. So, Kelly, now I remember because you and Jim were talking about this on Murmur at the time, right? Was that, and I know you were a big proponent of this, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So you love this.
I love National Novel Writing Month. So I picked it up in about 2004 was the first year I tried. And, the first couple of years, I didn't get very far at all. I mean, it's really, you miss a couple of days and all of a sudden you don't really think of it as, because it's about 1,600 words a day, and you don't really think of it, if you skip a day, it's like, oh, well, now I have to write like 1,650. You go, I have to write 3,200 words to catch up. I'm never going to catch up. And then you put it away and you're done and it's depressing. But I had a friend of mine was actually a really good cheerleader in 2006. He did it. He'd already done it a couple of times, and he's a lot more prolific than I am, so it's easier for him. But he made me stick with it that year, and we kept our totals sort of neck and neck all month long. So that really helped. And I finished, 50,000 words. I think I probably finished at about 9 p.m. on the last night, and it was awesome and made my eyes bleed. And then, so that was 2006 was the first year that I completed it. In 2007, I had a baby. So I didn't. And then in 2008, I did it again. And I found that like, after you do it once, it's like, well, I know I can do this. And I actually ended up finishing a few days early in 2008, which was pretty crazy. And then 2009 was the year of the murmur. And that was actually a lot of fun. We did a couple of different podcasts about it and some blog posts and got a whole bunch of people involved with it. And I discovered almost immediately in November that I was pregnant, and all of the extra time that I should have been spending writing, I was dealing with first trimester nausea and extreme exhaustion. So I bowed out fairly quickly in 2009. But Jim finished.
So these kids are really getting in the way of your novels, is what I'm hearing here.
Gosh.
You could have had an unbroken streak. No.
Yeah, for starters.
So Jim, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, last year, because when we were doing the Murmur podcast, I remember talking with Josh Flanagan about it, and he was like, "You have two finished novels. Why are you still doing this? And what have you done with those novels?" And so, when 2010 came around, because I'd done enough writing, I decided to actually do Nano Read Mo Month, and basically just read instead of wrote, write,
okay,
written,
right.
Whatever.
So, Jim, you have feelings about this event.
I have emotions.
You have some emotions.
Based in strong, logical, rational beliefs. No, I have to apologize to anybody who has heard the podcast we keep talking about, this 2009 back and forth we did on murmur.com, a site that has since gone woefully dormant. I think the four of us could take it over in a bloodless coup right now without – any real trouble. Its originators haven't gone on to bigger and better things. But yeah, I can't remember the first time I heard about this little escapade. I'm sure Kelly is the person who brought it to my attention, and I'm sure my initial reaction was, "Ooh, I don't like the sound of that at all." Because to me, like, I in a lot of ways am a self-starter, which can be good, but I also have a visceral hatred of or resistance to feeling competitive with other people, especially on something as solitary as writing. And as much as this month, as much as I get it, and I can see the value that something like National Novel Writing Month would have for people to cheerlead for one another and spur one another on. To me, it just seems like I'm going to spend the entire month looking over my shoulder, if that makes any sense, you know. And the idea that I'm sort of in this marathon with all these other people, you know, either trying to pass me or trying to trample me or not, you know, it just always sort of, it seemed like the death of my creativity. So maybe that was just me setting myself up to not, you know, it's one of those things that if you never try, you're never going to fail. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, so maybe that was just a defense mechanism. Now, since then, I have bitten the bullet. I can't remember whether it was last year or the year before I had what actually constituted an interesting idea to me, something that I felt like I could make some headway on. But then as the month went on, I found that I found National Novel Writing Month to be more stifling than motivating. And then I think the straw that broke the camel's back was that I was not able to log in to the stupid website to tell it how far I'd gotten, and I just got so irritated with trying to get some sort of technical support or customer service out of whatever poor person was doing it for free, wherever they might have been, that I was like, ah, the hell with this whole thing, right? I'd like, you know, threw it up. But I still have all the work that I did. Like I took copious notes on what I planned to do with that story, and I did a significant amount of writing. And every, you know, I keep thinking, this might be the time to sit down and actually flesh that out, because I did like the idea. I did want to see it turn into something. And I'll say that one of the things that I found most inspirational lately has not been, you know, a writer's group or seeing other people crow from the rooftops how far they've gotten on their November novel, but seeing that the one that our friend Josh Flanagan wrote last month has since been completed. He has posted it on his blog, and in the near future he will be offering it as an ebook via Amazon.com. And for me, one of the other things that always makes me resistant to something like National Novel Writing Month is that built into it is like, it doesn't matter if it's good. It doesn't matter. You know, it just matters how many words you get in at the end of the day. Like, I don't accept that premise at all. Like, I just, the idea, I might as well sit down and just start vomiting word salad into the keyboard with my fingertips if it doesn't matter. Like, that's just not the way I write. I don't write a first draft and then go back. I write 20 drafts in one sitting. If that makes any sense.
So like, you move it forward very slowly, you know, just trying to get every sentence just right as you go, rather than getting it all out and then going back and sort of
yes.
tweaking
it. If anybody,
then you never get anywhere because you just sit there and spin heels on like that one paragraph.
I don't think that. See, well, no, because if you've read anything I've ever written, whether it was a column for a website or whether it was a short story or whether it was something for a writing class, if it has been in your hands, that's the way I wrote it. I wrote it in one sitting and I never went back and looked at it again, but that one sitting was a long one. So that's, you know, that's always been my process, and it is completely antithetical to me that I'm just like, you will never get me to accept the idea that, oh, I'm just going to sit down and write whatever comes to my mind until I get 1,000 words on the page. It doesn't matter what they are. It always matters what they are to me.
Right.
So,
well, I think that's an extreme perspective on what NaNoWriMo is, because it lands somewhere in the middle, I feel.
It probably does. It wouldn't function if it worked the way I actually perceive it. So,
yeah, I think let's we can definitely talk about some of the pros and cons here. I just want to quickly add in for me that you know, I think the first year that I did it was actually because of your guys' conversation. It really brought it to my attention. I think Caroline, you mentioned that as well. I think it was 2009. It was the same year that Josh wrote his piece, and Josh was one of the ones that I was keeping pace with, and it really worked well for me for the exact opposite of what Jim is saying, in that I knew I had this idea and I knew I had a story that I wanted to tell. The novel that I wrote that month, and I did complete it, again, was using the same character from the Wormwood show that, you know, I talked about in the comic. And I had this one, but for me, I am more of a first draft and then go back and fix it up. And my problem is going back and fixing it up. And I'll talk about that later. But for me, part of it is I don't know what I'm going to write sometimes. Like, I have to write to figure it out. So the forced rough draft is really crucial to me to, like, lay down the foundation and figure out what I'm even saying. So I have to let it rip. If I were to, like, if I were to write one sentence and then go back and make sure that sentence was perfect, I would never get any momentum. This is going to sound a little weird, but I write a lot on momentum. Like, the words start to come, and there are times where I'll just write dialogue and I won't fill in what's going on in the scene right away because I'm just hearing the voices and I'm picturing it and I need to live that scene. I need to see where it's going, and then I need to go back. And so what NaNoWriMo did for me is it forced me to say, like, you've got to get 1,500 words down. You know what? So you can do that dialogue, but you better write it out. And then if you're not at 1,500 yet, you better go back and you better fill in what's going on in that room while that dialogue is happening. And hopefully you'll get to 1,500. So it worked for me on that level. And I actually got the whole thing done and got 50,000 words, over 50,000 words. And it worked really well. Now, my problem is that then I didn't do it again the next year because I was still trying to revise what I had done. And I started and I maybe got a third of the way through. But then other projects came up and I got involved with other things. And so I have not yet returned to it. And I'm curious too, because, and I want to get your guys' take on this in terms of what we do with National Novel Writing Month, which is, part of me kind of wants a clean slate where I can sit down and I can start on day one and I don't really know what story I want to tell.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling this terrifies Kelly.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't? Okay.
No, because I know you're more of a planner than I. That does not work for me.
Yeah, okay.
I start... Uh-oh. Actually, part of the reason that I failed
Kelly,
in 2000 and again, seriously?
Yeah, it just faded out for a second when you started. So okay. After you said it doesn't terrify me, or you said it doesn't work for me, and then it started.
Okay. So it just doesn't work for me. I tried that the first couple of years, because that's pretty much when they pitch, when the NaNoWriMo site pitches it to you. It's like, don't worry about it. Just start writing and the story will evolve. And you know, it'll be this wonderful, beautiful, I know, this, you know, this organic thing that just sort of explodes out of you when you hit that, you know, it's like that runner's high. You just hit that writer's high thing and you just go, and it's amazing. And it may not be coherent, but it's amazing.
I would love to actually hear from somebody, because I'm sure there are people who could do that. I would love to hear from somebody who's actually done the start from scratch on the first day of Nano, got to the end and finished it, revised the thing and actually had it. Because I'm sure there's people who are able to do it, and I want to know what, you know, what they're bringing to it that's allowing them to do that. But I think...
I want all the things that you want, except for a part where I read what they wrote, and it's not terrible.
Well, yes, I think that's but I'm sure there are people, but I wonder if the people who are able to do that are people. I would bet that they're people who are coming in with a fair amount of storytelling experience in some medium or other. I don't know when Josh did his. I don't know if he started from scratch. I don't know if he did a lot of planning, but he was obviously able to get through from start to finish. But he was, you know, he's been writing comics and he's been doing stuff like that. So I assume that he came in with a pretty good background, even if he hadn't written a novel before. But I agree. I don't see how, because when I have tried with anything of any length, really, there's like a certain short story length, because I did it a few times in grad school where I just needed to write something for a seminar. And I sat down and I got like a 25-page story out of it. But I feel like that's kind of setting that's for me, like that's the outer boundary of where I can just start with nothing and come up with something. Mm-hmm. And even that actually, like that story didn't end up in my thesis, because when I went back to try to revise it, it just overwhelmed me too much. And I think because it had been so linear when I was writing it, I couldn't find a way to make it be something other than it was.
See, I think for me, when I say that about kind of being curious about doing it from a blank slate, is because I think that I would have told you in the past that I write better, and I've even said it just now, that I kind of have to figure out what I'm writing, and so sometimes I have to write blindly. Like the piece I read on here a number of episodes ago, the Smitty story, I didn't know where it was going, I didn't know what I was doing. So that was very much in that model. That said, I have a feeling that, yeah, I think you guys may be right, and I think I may be realizing this about myself now, is that for longer pieces, that I need a lot more, because I feel like I was thinking that I was writing like that in 2009 when I did this story, but the fact of the matter is that this was a backstory on this character that I had been writing for 3 years prior to that, or 2 years prior to that. I knew the character very well, and I knew sort of there was an untold tale of his past, but, you know, I didn't have it all mapped out or anything, but so I knew the character.
Is that what ended up being the comic that you're
selling now? No, the comic is another story. Yeah, so the comic is another story that takes place right before. This one takes place years before that. And it's actually kind of tells two stories, one in flashback and one in the present. And but they were stories that sort of I knew that they had to be told at one point, but I had never figured them out. So the only thing I really knew was the character. It was still an intense exploration for me. I mean, there was stuff I was finding out. There were characters I was creating. All along the way, there were different things. But I at least knew... I knew where it ended, so it wasn't a writing from a blank slate figuring out. It wasn't like the Smitty story. It's like I knew where the character had to end up. But everything in between was all up to me how I wanted to do it.
And that's, sorry. That's pretty much all the... Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was clear. I think Kelly was getting ready to say what it is that she does do, and I had cut her off, so I apologize. And then I cut you off again to apologize for cutting you off. So go ahead.
Well, I think, and that's pretty much all I do. I mean, I start with a story that I want to tell. I start with a couple of characters. I generally know, you know, what happens halfway through the middle and what happens towards the end and how it's going to resolve. But I don't have a chapter by chapter outline. You know, I know that to pull it off, you basically need about 15 chapters that are about 3,000 words apiece. So I kind of know what I need to have. But I definitely don't have the whole thing like plotted out start to finish. And like you said, there's all sorts of surprises that come up, you know, characters that show up and are like, this is how I'm connected to your entire story. And this is how I'm going to change everything. And that's fine because I've still got that framework and a goal.
But haven't you talked about having like diagrams and stuff?
I do that too.
I'm curious though. Do you do that during the month, or is it only writing during the month and then you go back and figure that out? Is that like, because I'm thinking if I have to do 1,500 words a day, am I also spending like 2 hours
you do not have
working
time.
On
no.
diagrams and stuff like you, that?
Absolutely do not. So for NaNoWriMo, you can, they give you rules and, you know, you're only really judging against yourself. So rules are rules. But basically what they say is you can do any sort of outlining and character sketching and back history and stuff that isn't actually part of your novel, but is writing related to your novel. You can do before NaNoWriMo starts, but you can't start the actual story until midnight on November 1st. Or I suppose 12:01 a.m. on November 1st. So definitely, if you're going to do it, that if you're going to have an outline, I would outline beforehand. I would have, if you do character sketches, I would have that set up beforehand. If you need history, if you need to do any like research to create the world, you know, or if somebody's going to be an astrophysicist, you might want to read up on that on Wikipedia before, because that sort of exploration, you could lose 3 hours doing, and that's 3 hours you needed to have written 1,500 words. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So what you're saying is that this is not the time to try your hand at historical fiction.
Unless it takes place in the 80s. Not if you're worried about accuracy.
I did that, actually. Not the historical part, but I did that when I wrote this novel, because I had to deal with some things. Like, I had set up a character that had autism, and so I had to look into some things like that and figure out some stuff. There were some things I had to set in England at certain places, and so I had to do some, like, a lot of Googling and looking around at things and trying to figure out. And then also mine was, you know, sort of a horror thing, so there were some, like, occulty bits that I had to look up and research. So I did find myself doing that throughout, but I also took it to a point where I'm like, okay, I don't know that much about Uruguay, so I'm just going to kind of get a rough idea, and then I'm going to write some stuff, and then I'm going to come back to it later and fix it up. So I found myself that if I did decide that I wanted to take the character somewhere that I didn't know anything about, I'd figure out enough to sketch out the place and not get anything too wrong, and then I'd go back and fill in with proper details later.
And I definitely did a lot of that. I would just highlight the second, like, if there was some, if I needed to come up with a name for like a city or somebody's last name, and I wanted it to be super cool, like, I'd spend 20 minutes realizing I've lost 20 minutes trying to get the last name, and just put in, like, you know, Guido's last name as his last name and highlight it, and then just move on, because you can replace that stuff later.
I may have gotten that from you if you talked about that in the podcast, because I totally did that year. Yeah. I would have things where I put in, like, just in yellow highlighter where it just says, like, name goes here, or come up with clever name, or something like that, you know,
absolutely.
and then just leave it and move on and you know, figure it out later.
I have a lot of says something witty because dialogue, I tend to start scenes with dialogue, but it's also the thing that I spend the most time revising, and that tends to get revised up to like the last minute of being done with the story. So there are some times where I was like, okay, this dialogue run it's sort of telling me what the characters are talking about, but what I know here is that I need a punchline for a joke. I need the emotional effect that this line is going to have on them. So I kind of would have a, you know, or like says something that hurts her feelings, because what I really want to do is write the scene where they make up, something like that.
Right.
Sure.
Every Star Trek script that ever got turned in on time used this trick, by the way. So don't feel all that bad. If you ever look up, did they just call it technobabble?
Oh.
Or did they, like, there would come a point where they had to say, like, we're reversing the polarity on the dilithium crit. Like, so they would just write in technobabble and then get the science guys to fill it in later.
That's how I always imagine that they do medical dramas as well.
Oh, they do.
They right. Must, right? I mean, because that's always held me back to thinking, like, oh, I don't know. I'd have to do all the research and stuff like that. I want to be the writer that just says, you know, get a doctor to fill some stuff in here.
Just blame it on lupus and move on.
This kind of brings something up. Do you guys think, is there a particular kind of story that would lend itself to working within this format? Something that, you know, like what I'm
Romana Clef, thinly veiled memoir.
That's certainly one, like, I actually can't personally do that, but I think if that's the kind of writing you do, it's because you're just like, I was there, I don't have to look shit up. But the one thing I was thinking of, and this actually probably goes in the Romana Clef, thinly veiled memoir, I guess I have to be the person to bring this up since Paul's not here. There's a Michael Chabon essay that I think is in...
The required Chabon reference.
The required Chabon, but it really is. And it's obviously not about National Novel Writing Month. But he talks about, I think it's in his book Maps and Legends, and it's also in the intro to the reissued Mysteries of Pittsburgh. And he talks about, which is a short novel, it's probably a little longer than 50,000 words, but not a lot. And so he talks about how he just realized he needed to write a novel. Which is funny because he's a guy who's famous for later on spending years on a book that he didn't finish and sort of tossing it. And then he wrote a book about a guy who spent years on a book he didn't finish. But anyway, I'm sorry, I'm digressing too much here. But this he really is very specific about how he decided what kind of book he was going to write because he needed to write it quickly. He wanted to be able to get it done. And he said, basically, I'm going to have a couple characters. I'm going to put them in a place. And I'm going to give a period of time. And I think it was like over a summer. And he had looked at, like he said, basically both The Great Gatsby and Philip Roth's, what's the name of it? Goodbye Columbus, had basically the same structure, which is basically it starts with two characters meeting and then what happens to them over the course of a summer and you have an ending. And so he basically had that in his head and did it. So that seems like, that's one kind of model. You basically figure what are the three things that I need to put in this book. And he has written much more complex books since then, but I thought it was a really interesting kind of formula for. So are there other things like that? Are there elements that would be a good idea?
I thought about a very similar thing to this, but coming at it from a slightly different angle as before we started the show, I was thinking to myself, you know, we've just come off this whole series about genre. And I was thinking, we talked a lot about how genre has certain, and Caroline, I know you and I talked about this a while ago, which you said, you know, I feel like with genre pieces, it helps me because I know that there's going to be like a vampire that needs a stake in his heart. You know, like I instantly know what the stakes are. You know, where if you say,
to point out,
you didn't bring up vampires.
You mentioned vampires before I did. Put that out there.
Well, it's sort of bizarro week because you know, Paul's not here, so Caroline talked about Michael Chabon, and now I'm talking about vampires. But no, and that's something that I thought about because we used the word like guideposts at certain points that genres have certain conventions to them that the readers enjoy because they like a certain format, and I was thinking that maybe genre is actually, I wonder if genre stories work better in a NaNoWriMo situation because at least it gives you something to start with. Like, there's a vampire out there, he needs a stake in his heart. I now know what the stakes are. If I say, you know, that it's two people who meet over the summer, I don't know anything about what that is. And so maybe for some people, they won't need that freedom because they're going to decide what it's going to be about. Someone like me, as you said that, I started thinking, that's interesting, but that doesn't make me want to write that story. What makes me want to write that story is when I say two people meet over the summer and one thinks he's discovered the Loch Ness Monster. Now I'm like, oh, okay. Is he crazy? Or is there really the Loch Ness Monster? Are they going to go to Loch Ness? And, you know, what's going to happen? And now I want to write it. See? So for me, I need that extra step beyond two people meet. I need to know, like, the first thing, I mean, that's a fine starting point, but I'm not going to sit down and write it till I think, like, why are they even meeting? And then whatever I come up with is probably going to be, you know, what launches the story.
Because I was going to say that the quest genre is a perfect format because it has a very, you know, somebody needs to go get something. They travel for an indeterminate amount of time, say 49,000 words, and then they find it. And then the novel's over. So, I mean, I think because genre has a most genres have a structure. They have these guideposts. It's not just you know where to start. You know where to start. You know what's going to happen in the middle. So you have this goal halfway through to get to, and then you know how it's going to resolve itself, whether it's questing genre, whether it's a romance, whether it's two people meet at the beginning of the summer, fall in love, and then have to say goodbye at the end of the summer, or they discover, you know, the Holy Grail in the middle of it, just whatever. Like, you know, you always know where you're headed. And I think that helps to what you were saying earlier, Dave, that helps you keep your momentum going because you know how you know you have to get there and you know how long it's going to take you to get there.
And I mean, I think something as simple as a quest is a very broad thing, because you could be questing to go to, you could be trying to reach, what were they trying to reach in National Lampoon's Vacation?
Wally World.
Yeah. I mean, it could be Indiana Jones looking for the Holy Grail, or it can be Wally World. It doesn't matter. These are entirely different stories, but they all have that same thing. They have to reach a goal. They have to get to
and
something.
Things are going to get in the way.
And things are going to get in the way. And, you know, so, but for you, Kelly, do you, like when you say quest, do you immediately think like, okay, well, I need it to be like something magical or something fantasy oriented, or, you know, or is it enough to just say, I'm going to do some kind of quest thing and then figure out like, where do you start with that?
Well, I don't want to go back into the whole sci-fi versus fantasy thing. but for me, questing is a genre outside of setting. So the quest could be, it could be completely straight, right. Or it could be in a fantasy setting, or it could be, you know, I tend to gravitate towards the supernatural just because that's my interest.
Right, right. So if I tell you quest, you're likely going to then think about it and come up with something that's probably in a supernatural or fantasy type setting is what I'm...
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily even fantasy, but definitely it has to be interesting. So yeah. To me, in order for it to be interesting, it's going to have to be something... I was going to say interesting.
Right. It's not going to be Wally World, more than likely, is what I'm getting at.
Yes. Yeah. That sounds really, not boring, but that sounds not, that's not going to engage me as a writer as much as I'm going to need it to for NaNoWriMo.
Yeah, I agree with you, just in terms of that's how I work as well. Like, you know, I like things that are, I think I gravitate towards things that are either like really quirky or supernatural in some way. So it's like, you know, even though I've written stories that are pretty straightforward before, I think if you want me to do something in the long term, it's going to have to at least excite a bunch of different interests that I have. So, you know, for instance, with this comic book thing, it's sort of a crime noir, but it's also like, you know, an exorcist type movie, you know, and that to me has all these cool elements that I get to play with then. So if I'm going to sit down with a NaNoWriMo novel, I want to make sure it has enough of that, that I can either start playing with one of these. In other words, I don't want to get bored. And so I need to have enough elements that are things that I like to play with in place.
Definitely. You know? And you have to keep throwing conflict at people. Otherwise you have a short story and it's over.
I'm now thinking about, Dave, we had that conversation about, you know, how does genre help you with the obstacles in the story. Last year, while I was working on not finishing my NaNo, and I'm thinking back now, like, that I've got some distance from it, which, by the way, I still haven't reread it because I can't figure out how to open Scrivener, so that will tell you something. But I had sort of an idea about, like, okay, these kids, they have a band. And there's a few different ways that narrative can go. Like, you know, it's either that they're going to, you know, they're going to make it and they're going to be awesome, or they're going to be, you know, they're going to crash and burn, and like, that's what you're looking at, Spinal Tap or whatever. Or I could have done like sort of a romance with the characters. And I think the reason I didn't finish is because I wasn't able to figure out, I just kind of wanted to tool around and play with these characters, and I didn't have an idea then of where I wanted it to go. Like, I feel, and then so when I took the characters out of that and I retooled it and wrote it for my piece for the romance show that we did, I was suddenly, and I was still kind of like, I don't think this is a book, and I didn't go on with it, but it gave me a lot more focus just in writing that short piece, because I'm like, okay, suddenly I understand how there could be an endpoint for this story. And I think the thing that I started last year, I never allowed myself to sort of, you know, just say, okay, this is where I want them to get to. And since I didn't have any place for them to get to, they were just kind of hanging around the house,
right,
and doing stuff and entertaining me.
Saying witty things.
Right. Yeah.
Being in a band. Like,
being in a band, right.
It's fun. And I'm like, it made me want to write songs, which is obviously not the right, you know, that's not.
So in a way, the romance prompt kind of forced you to actually put a conflict in with those characters, because what you came up with, as I recall, is, you know, he's cheating on her, or there was some, or she was interested in him, but he was with somebody else. I don't remember the exact details, but.
So that, it's a love triangle.
Yeah. You had a love triangle going. And so instantly that's, you know, the meat. And so in that case, you didn't need need it to be vampires, but what you needed to do is you needed some stakes for the characters, you know?
Right.
Not stakes, but stakes, you know what I'm saying.
That could have turned, if I had put a different end of the first chapter, that could be a vampire book.
But you know what? But the point is, even though Kelly and I, or well, I won't speak for Kelly, but even though I'm saying I need like those cool toys to play with, I know that that can be a dangerous road to go down.
Right.
Because you can just put things in to be cool, and it's, and you did, in this case, you didn't need vampires. You found something that I think is more organic and probably more realistic. You know, I remember talking to a guy that was a story editor, and I was submitting stuff to him, and he kept talking to me about, like, you know, whenever somebody's stuck, they put ninjas in it, you know, and that's always dangerous. This was for comic book type stuff, but, right. You know, it's like, I think that's a real thing, is that you have to be careful of that. On the flip side, you have to, if you love ninjas and want to tell a ninja story, you have to embrace that too, you know? So I think, like Kelly, like me, you know, I like that stuff. I like to tell straightforward, dramatic stories as well, but, like, if, you know, a novel, I know that I love all that kind of crazy, weird stuff, and I know that I've got to have characters that I can have fun with. And so in my novel, I had people that were part of a cult that, you know, weren't really vampires, but they had fake vampire teeth. And then I had, you know, demons, and then I had social workers, you know, and just like every kind of little thing that, like, I knew I could play with, you know, the social worker, because my girlfriend is a social worker, you know, so things like that, that, like, I could either pull from in my life, or that just like a cool, crazy thing that I wanted to utilize. But I knew it had to be a mix. You know, to get it going. But I'm very impressed that you were able to be like, I've got the band thing and I just need something to do with it. But rather than going with some other genre piece, you found a way to do it just with the characters.
Jim mentioned the Romana Clef, like the life novel. And I'm curious, like, if you go into something like that to do a book, what's your end game? Like, what do you need to decide?
I have a feeling, I'm thinking of Annie Hall now. Basically, I think the reason a lot of people do that is so that they can take some episode of their lives and then rewrite it the way they wish it had gone. Either they all sound a lot more clever, or they explore what would have happened if they made different choices or things like that. But that's, you know, I usually abandon ship before I get to that point.
But. You know, I won't be as down as Jim about it, but I will say that I have thought similar things. But I often think that there's stories that I want to tell that are more the Romana Clef style, that it's because I'm trying to figure out some things about life. Or, like, you know, I've had things, you know, happen in my life in the last 10 years that are really sort of life-changing things, you know, having a kid, going through divorce, things like that. Just that things that do affect you, and they change the way you look at the world. And I know that change has happened, and I've kind of, in the back of my mind, I'd say the last, like, 3 or 4 years, I've been looking at, like, I'm like, that's a story. I know there's a story there that I have to tell. And I think I'm waiting for enough distance from it to figure out what that is, because I don't feel like I can quite write it yet. And maybe I need something like NaNoWriMo to actually just trick me into, you know, writing through it, because maybe I'm just blocking myself. I don't know. But I do have this inkling that I have enough in my life in, like, the last, let's say, 10, 12 years of my life that I could do something like that. And there are things about this life that I'm working out, that I'm figuring out, that have changed and shaped the way I look at things. And that, to me, is a story. It's a novel or a screenplay. I don't know. But coming, you know, there's something there.
Coming at the same idea from the opposite extreme, if I said a zombie spaceship wasteland to anyone within the sound of my voice, would that ring any bells with anybody?
I actually read that book.
Yes, it's a book by it's a collection of essays, personal essays by Patton Oswalt, the comedian, voice of Remy from Ratatouille, and very gifted stand-up. But he, the title essay of the book is about how when young men are beginning to express themselves creatively but haven't had enough life experience to write anything coherent or compelling, they usually leap immediately into one of three genres or tropes. They either go zombie, they go spaceship, or they go post-apocalyptic wasteland, because you don't have to understand the rules of society, you don't have to understand the people around you, because you either leave the planet entirely, or society breaks down, or, you know, for you know, it gets you out of having to know the way the world works, to either, or if not to leave the world entirely. And in talking about, you know, the kind of books that would be easy to write from a novel writing month perspective, that essay immediately leapt to mind because it is literally almost tailor-made for an exercise like this.
That's very true, and that essay is great because he basically breaks it down in terms of what you choose, zombie, spaceship, wasteland, it depends on the kind of person you are. And in a way, it's sort of that great fantasy exercise. We've talked before about fantasy being a way to, you strip away the mundane reality, but what it does is it sharpens the human drama. Because if it's elves and dwarves fighting or whatever it is, or going after dragons, the conflict is life and death, and it's that much crisper and clearer. And so this is about like kids basically taking feelings of alienation or survival or right. Whatever it is, and then just kind of creating this wasteland or this alien society or whatever it is to take you to sort of get the emotions across, but completely strip it, not have to worry at all about all the bits of reality and realism that you would have to do. And so you're right. Yeah. It actually works really well for something like a national novel writing.
In a post-apocalyptic wasteland, you don't have to explain how a checkbook works or whatever else it might be.
Or how sucky it is when relationships slowly fall apart and, that kind of stuff.
I had the experience over this past year. I don't want to name it, but I read a book where I was about five chapters into it, and I said, this is somebody's NaNoWriMo novel, and I can tell because there are things about the style of the book, and I went and I Googled a few times, and that was, in fact, what it was. She had written and sold, and I don't want to totally slam the book because I felt like it's a book that would have been, I think that could have been good in a couple of drafts, and I kind of feel like she sold it on the premise. I will say, obviously, it was a she. Sold it on the premise.
You've just narrowed it down for us, Caroline. We're all thinking about what this book is.
It's not like super famous I just don't want to pick on this writer.
Mm-hmm. Actually, if you told me Twilight was a National Novel Writing Month submission, I would believe it in pretty much.
Well, that's plausible. But what it was that the first like five or six chapters of this were just kind of going around in circles. It was kind of like, she was like, okay, this is this character, and I'll sort of describe like the sort of sphere around her. And then move on, this character, I'll describe a sphere around them. And it's just kind of, I felt like I could physically see the world of the novel expanding around the narrator. And it was kind of a shame because I really liked a lot of the ideas in the book. But it gave me some insight into, because I feel like that's what I've done a couple times when I've started nanos or just started a book, just trying to start kind of from scratch without having already developed the ideas, where I would end up having a lot of people talking around, explaining what the concepts were. And it wasn't just like the traditional kind of exposition dump. It was a very specific kind of, so I could sort of, I felt like I knew where she started and ended each day of writing the Nano.
It took you out of the book because you were kind of looking at the craft of it. You were looking at
And if it had been a brilliantly done, compelling book, then I wouldn't have been doing this. So obviously there were some issues with the writing, but it's, this is somebody I might like check in again and read her fifth novel because somebody obviously has a writing voice and has some ideas, but I feel like I've read a lot of first novels that weren't necessarily the most polished, wonderful things. And then the writers went on to grow. So it's not necessarily, like, I don't want to say, oh, but this book would have been better if she hadn't written it for Nano, because she might never have started it. But it's a particular sort of species of beginning writer that we're probably going to see more of.
Right.
I will tell you, the genre was young adult fantasy. And I think that, that's probably, I feel like that's probably the demographic for a lot of people who do NaNoWriMo. But it's also, if you're going to try to sell a book in a market today, it's not a bad one.
Yeah, absolutely.
I actually think this writer probably got pretty rich. So
I think this is the danger of. And I think we should talk quickly about. I think we've gone over pros and cons and stuff. So I think we should just talk about quickly some tips for success or what we think works or doesn't work with it. But really quickly, I just want to say about that is that, you know, it kind of goes back to what I briefly mentioned earlier when I was talking about my Kickstarter campaign, is that there's a lot of ways that people can put this out into the world now. Like, really, you could do a NaNoWriMo novel in a month, and then you could just throw it up on Amazon now and sell it as a Kindle book. And I think that's the real danger, of creating a breed of writers who just kind of churn the thing out and then put it up and sort of ignore the fact that there's a lot of rewriting and there's a lot of craft that that other authors do. And, you know, you don't want something like, you know, Caroline, as you said, is, you know, you were able to obviously notice these little bits around the edges, you know, and maybe that's something that she's still working out or whatever. But, it's going to be interesting because I think we might end up with that in the next generation as a group of writers that, you know, just rush through and then just put it up because you can. It's kind of like people that just blog everything and, you know, there's no style or form to it. But, you know, I guess my optimistic feeling is that the cream will always rise and that the people who do really pay attention to their craft, they're going to stand out and they're going to stand up from that, even though we live in a world now that, you know, the signal to noise ratio will just change, you know, continually changes because you can put everything out there.
And it's definitely one of the ways in which the internet is destroying our society.
but the market, I mean, the market and the audience are always going to shape what fiction looks like. And there's plenty of, I mean, if you look in like the sort of the pulp era, there's a lot of people who, it was like, it was the point when writing paid enough that if you did a lot of it, you can make money off it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, the thing is, like, what's freeing today is that you're probably not going to make money off it no matter what. But
so you might as well make it good.
Right. Well, yeah. So you can kind of afford to, but definitely with the creative writing program background that I came from, I think that there was a certain attitude. If you're going to be successful within this realm, you're probably going to be successful as a professor of creative writing. So you don't have to necessarily put out a book every year. You know, you put out a book when you have a book that you feel like is good and the rest of the time you teach or whatever, you know, and it's certainly a valuable role. But then, there are people who wrote pulp and who wrote, or even someone like Scott Fitzgerald, you know, wrote a ton of short stories because if he sold a bunch of stories, he could make some money.
Right.
So that the incentive there is also toward not necessarily revising and refining.
That's true. I mean, there's always been that bulk. It's interesting that, you know, because you don't even need to go to a publisher now, that you can just throw it up yourself on the Amazon marketplace or whatever it is.
Right.
You know, it just brings or it even to a whole new level.
What was it? Was it Lulu.com that would, you could print, you get a print copy of and self-publish online that way? I read and passed around a novel that was written that way, and I think, Kelly, you may have been subjected to it at one point.
Was it the zombie one?
Yeah. It was not the spaceship or the wasteland one. It was the zombie one.
It was the zombie one.
It's one of those things that, you know, it's very, on the one hand, you say, well, good for this person. They've accomplished something. I don't have anything on my bookshelf with my name on it. And then at the same time, the depth and width of the spelling and grammatical errors were so shocking that you just were like, the world still needs editors. Congratulations for proving that point. But like on where this whole thing is concerned, on the one hand, I hear what you guys are saying and think, well, if you're reading a book and you don't like it and you go, oh no, this is obviously their NaNoWriMo book. It's like, well, doesn't that tell you everything you need to know about why not to do National Novel Writing Month? But then at the same time, that person has a book out.
Yes.
And I don't. And I'm certainly not going to be talking about the way that the internet has ruined society. I'm not going to be like, oh my God, everybody's writing novels now. Oh no. Like, you know, like there as
somebody actually – I think it was last year, it was definitely last year around this time. Somebody put out an article that was like, don't do NaNoWriMo, the world's got enough crappy writers out there. Yes, and actually, and I wanted to talk about that before we ended, sure. And we can talk about it now. NaNoWriMo is the reason The Deceptionist exists, because it was all of y'all talking about your challenges about writing during National Novel Writing Month on Twitter, that I was like, if I could just get these people in a room every couple of weeks and just talk about writing, that would be so awesome. And now we have The Deceptionists. Yay. So yay for NaNoWriMo for that, if nothing else.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I did want to get back to, I guess, the tips for success and stuff, because we've covered a lot of it. I mean, we generally decide that, you know, you need to have a goal. You need to have at least a bare minimum outline. One of our Twitter listeners, Sean Richards, actually asked, you know, how do you guys plan your writing time? Is it the same time every day, whenever you can? I would say that I have success when I force myself to make time. If you just assume you'll get around to it, there's always something else you can do, because Lord knows laundry needs to get done and kids need to be fed. And yep. Even people who don't have kids and laundry, I'm sure, have things they need to do. I just don't remember what those are anymore.
I still have laundry, Kelly.
Right, right. Well, you know, sure, but not like four people's worth of laundry. And then that's it. Yeah. You don't have to do laundry for a house full of dirty, dirty children.
I'm glad I don't have to do your laundry, Kelly.
But I mean, you do have to choose to set aside time, and it has to, you have to force it to be a priority. If you let other things get in the way, other things will get in the way. Just like writing in general, I find.
This past weekend, I set aside, I had the weekend off. It was the first weekend off in a while. And my first weekend off of not doing anything else. I do not work weekends. But I was like, I'm just going to write. I'm going to write all weekend. It's 3 days. I'll do this. And probably if I sum up the total amount of writing time I did, it was probably like 3.5 hours. And yeah. I'm like, it's depressing. But then I'm like, you know what? If I can procrastinate a day and I actually only write an hour, that means I could write an hour any day. Like, I don't actually need to take 12 hours and waste 9 of them in order to get 3 days of writing done. So,
that's a great way to look at it. I, for me, I don't have a set time where I write every day, or at least when I did this a couple of years ago, I didn't. It was enough for me to know that I had to do 1,500 words, and then I would sneak that in wherever I could, because I just kept that word count in my mind. And I want to backtrack slightly, because this made me think of this when we're talking about pros and cons, is that something that helps, or something that's interesting or a good thing about NaNoWriMo for me, is that if you're just a guy who writes, you know, like if you're in a relationship and it's like, oh yeah, I should be writing. Oh, well, let's go. We need to do this though. Let's go do that, whatever. But if you take a month and you say, hey, I got to do this. I've got this goal. I got to get 1,500 words every day. What I found is I got a lot of support. I got a lot of support, and I got a lot of, oh, well, you know, I need to work on something too. Let's go to the cafe and we'll just write, you know, and you'll get your 1,500 words done and we'll do it, you know, at this time. And so, you know, I found that NaNoWriMo was really good for me for having a set time frame, because anyone can do anything for a month. And if you let your loved ones and friends know, you know, hey, this month is going to be kind of crazy because I'm doing this. You know, I found that I actually got a lot of support, and so that was a benefit for me. So, but within the context of that question about success, I didn't have, or when we write, I didn't have a set time. I just knew 1,500 words, and it wasn't like, hey, I should get 3,000 done today, and then I don't have to write tomorrow. It was always just, hey, just get 1,500 words. If I got more, it was great, but I just focused on, hey, I got to get to 1,500, and then I'll be all right.
Did you? I am. Because I'm a stat geek, I actually have a spreadsheet that you put in how many words you did today, and that it figures out how many words you need to write every day for the rest of the month. And that was really handy to see, like, when I was getting behind, like, because you're never going to get all the way caught up if you just compare it to where you should be, you know, because unless you have a day where you blitz and you write 5,000 words, which does happen, which is awesome, like, you know. It's hard to get ahead. So I have the spreadsheet. And then one year we decided to take a trip. Well, we didn't decide to. There was a wedding that we had to go to in New York. So I knew that, like, in the middle of November, which is already a crazy month when you add in Thanksgiving and my daughter's birthday is at the beginning of the month, like, I knew that I wasn't going to be able to make it. And so if I just did 1,500 words a day, there were going to be like 6 days where I wasn't going to get 1,500 words. So then I updated the spreadsheet so that I could say, well, this day I'm going to do a lot, this day I'm not going to do a lot. And then it did all sorts of magic things. And that helped me stay focused, but that's something that only works if you're crazy.
Is there a sort of guideline you have for like what is one day's work? Is it just you write 1,500 and then you stop, or do you try to break it into scenes? Do you just... Is it good to stop in the middle of a scene? Is it good to finish a scene?
Well, I think it's Hemingway that said something like, you should always stop writing when you know what happens next, because mm-hmm. the minute you pick up your pen again, you know what you're going to write.
Yeah.
I think that was Hemingway, and I completely paraphrased whatever the quote was, but mm-hmm. I find that really works for me because, again, then I know what I'm doing, but then I'm worried that I'm going to forget it. So it's spinning mm-hmm. around in my head. So I try to just cram it. I would just write. I wouldn't ever stop unless you have to.
Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily go, oh, I got 1,500. I can stop now. I play the scene out, but it would take mm-hmm. the pressure off me. Be like, okay,
yeah.
Once I get to the end of this. But I also find a thing, you know, we talked about this earlier, where I'll write a lot of dialogue and, you know, I don't know about you guys. I feel like there's this weird split where, you know, in Hollywood terms and script writing terms, they always talk about coming in late and leaving early the scenes. But I've also heard a lot of writers and novelists and stuff talk about, I can't remember what writer it was, but I remember talking about keeping the conversation going. In other words, like letting yourself write into that unknown territory where you're not trying to end the conversation to move the scene to the next thing, but you're actually trying to keep it writing because you want to know what's going to happen next. You want to figure it out. So there are times when I would do that where I'm not even thinking about the word count. I'm just going like, I don't know where this conversation is going, and I'm getting into that momentum, into that flow, and I just let it go as long as I can. You know, and eventually it lends itself to something, and I'm like, oh, I see where this is going, you know, and maybe that's where I stop once I get to the end of that conversation, but I know where it's going now. Or, you know, I'm trying to remember what I did in 2009. I don't think I really ever left it where I'm like, oh, I got 1,500 and I just, you know, I don't know what I'm doing, so I'm going to stop. I probably wrote until I got figured out what was on my mind. So it probably fits with Kelly's quote, you know, about, you know, knowing at least where you're going to, what you're going to write next, and then stopping there.
Yeah, I wouldn't ever stop writing, just because there's a thing that happens around week three. And it's week three. It's actually around the, like, the 18,000 to 22,000 word point where you hit this wall of despair and it's like you've been at it long enough that you're kind of exhausted, but you haven't sort of crested over that peak and realized that, you know, the end isn't quite in sight, but you hit that, like, right. it's usually about the third week. If you have padding, if you have 5 or 6,000 words banked, so to speak, you can weather that storm much easier, because then you're not also beating yourself up with like, oh, I only wrote 300 words today, and now I'm, you know, 18,000 or 1,800 words behind. And it's week three. I think when we did the Murmur podcast, I didn't mention week three at the beginning because I didn't want to scare people away, because it is it is a nightmare. And even when you've done it before, you still hit that wall and you're like, I'm not going to make it this time. But then you get to like 30 and you're like, oh, I've only got 20K left. It's totally a cakewalk. And then you hit 40 and you're like, I'm done. Like, I can do 10,000 words in my sleep.
Yeah.
It definitely hits a peak and then starts to go roll downhill. I mean, you definitely pick up that momentum at the end.
But that cresting that peak is just... it's a nightmare.
The last thing I'll mention for success for me was that, and this is sort of the opposite of what Jim was saying. He's saying like looking over his shoulder was a negative thing. For me, I found it to be actually a very positive thing, in that, you know, we mentioned Josh Flanagan, but he was one that was really keeping pace. And he was one of the people, you know, when you set up the thing on the NaNoWriMo site, you have your friends and your buddies and stuff like that. And so I needed people that were hitting their quota every day, because it kept me going like, well, if Josh can do it, then I can do it. Or there was like, mm-hmm. there were a couple people, and it actually helped me. So what I would say, if anybody is doing it for the first time this year, is, you know, find some friends that, and maybe it's people that have done it before, so you know that they're going to keep up with it, or they can do it, they have that confidence. Because for me, when I would check in the middle of the day and I would see that, you know, Josh had hit his mark for that day or was getting close to it, it would spur me forward to do it. You know, so again, if my goal was just to get the words down and get the 50,000 words, get the novel done, and then, you know, rewrite it later, then, you know, that was good for me because it just kept reminding me, like, hey, if he can do it, you can do it, you know?
Yeah, I think as long as you've got people that are at about the same pace as you, it's good because there are people I hear that, like, they're done on November 6th.
Yeah. See, now that can be very discouraging. I would get mad at people who are too far ahead of me.
Right.
But if it's somebody that's just keeping that nice, easy pace, that was just right, you know. And then a couple of people that are lagging behind so you feel better than them, you know.
No, you want to encourage them.
Oh, of course. But I mean, secretly you feel better than them.
Yeah. I mean, a couple people talked about this on Twitter today too, but we're definitely going to do everything we can as the deceptionist to be our listeners' cheerleaders for this effort. I don't know. It's been a while. They updated the NaNoWriMo site since the last time I was on it, and it looks like there is some sort of writing buddies thing. I don't know if we can create a subgroup within NaNo. Yeah, and if not, I mean, we can put something on the page. They've got widgets out the wazoo. Just become my writing buddy on NaNoWriMo. I'm Anna Luna. So it's the same as my Twitter account and pretty much everything else. And then we will definitely have a cheering squad for everyone who wants to do it, because I think it's a great exercise. Even if you don't do anything with the novel, even if you don't make it, just challenging yourself, being able to produce words is a hurdle that every writer goes through. And this is definitely the sort of challenge that can get you over that hurdle and get you comfortable with just volume. And it might not be the best volume or finished volume, Jim, but it's definitely a challenge you need to learn to overcome as a writer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I will get off my soapbox.
Well, I think that's a good place to talk about whether or not each of us is going to do it this year. But really quickly before we do that, I did want to go to one other listener question, which was from Mizelle on Twitter, Julia, who said that her main issue this year is how to build writing momentum for the rest of the year beyond NaNo. And that's something that resonates with me because that's one of the things is I think that, you know, NaNo is great for blocking out that time, giving yourself a goal and achieving it, but it's not enough to then take that. If you want to do something with that writing, it's not enough to then take that and put it in a drawer. You have to do something with it, or you don't want to do your only creative writing, you know, if you're really serious about this, in 1 month and then not do anything for the rest of the year. I mean, I don't know if any of us are like that. I mean, I need to be doing something creative. If I go too long without doing anything, it really starts to weigh on me. And I feel that need to write something. But yeah, I mean, that's something that I don't know if I have a definitive answer. I have a lot of projects always going on. And in those, I always try to have deadlines in them. And in them, I also try to collaborate a lot with other people because that keeps me honest about my deadlines. you know, it's interesting. I realized through the course of doing Deceptionist and looking at all of my work is that I'm very collaborative as a writer. And part of that, I think, is to keep that momentum going. And then part of that is just that I need to work it out with other people. It was funny. I was listening to a show. I think it was John Suntris's Word Balloon, and he had Mark Waid, a comic book writer, on there. And Mark at one point said something like, you know, I've been writing comics for, I've written like, you know, hundreds of comics in my career, if not thousands. And he's like, I can probably think of five that I wrote without actually talking to anybody. He's like, if I have to call a friend, if I have to call an editor, I need to bounce things off. And I realize that's why I collaborate with so many people. And that's why even shows like The Deceptionist really helped me, because I need to be talking about it. I need to be working through it. And even when I was doing my NaNoWriMo in 2009, I was actually stopping and talking. And in this case, I had a great lifeline in the sense that Jeremy Rogers was my, you know, Wormwood co-creator, and he knew the character too. And so I could go like, I want him to do this, and I think I want to do this. And I'd be just talking to him about it. And I could see that without even him saying anything, he could see that I was like working it out in my mind, going like, well, maybe he's not. Oh, he probably does this. Yeah, that's what he does. And he'd be like, yeah, that sounds good. I'm like, okay, thanks. You know? And then that was it, you know. But I it really helps me to talk to other people. So, you know, I can't even remember why I started talking about that now. But but that would be another success thing for me.
For the question about how do you keep your writing up throughout the year?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I got so caught up in my story. Right. Yeah, I think that for me, I continue to set other deadlines and work on other projects with other people. But the big part was that I should have been revising that novel right after that month. And I didn't. I took a break. And then after that, I started just getting involved in other projects. And I'm like, okay, I'll come back to it. And I think it was last year's NaNoWriMo. Everybody was working on it. I said, I'm not going to do it this year, but I'm going to spend a month revising. And I maybe got about halfway through, but I didn't have the same pressure. I wanted to use the event because everyone else was so gung-ho, I thought it would fire me up. But I kind of you know, flaked out on it. But, you know, and so that's a tough thing for me, is the rewriting part of it.
Yeah.
We should do a whole follow-up show about this. Yes.
We should
second drafts. We should really do it. Jim can sit that one out, or he could just sit and listen like he did.
He could be like, my second sentence I rewrote 47 times. So are we going to do it this year? Obviously, Kelly, I think you're doing it this year.
Yes, officially, I am. I was on the fence until today, and we had a family meeting. Am I on mute?
No.
Sorry,
we're you listening said in the middle of
do
it,
you,
and I was
do
like,
you wish that you were?
No. We had a family meeting this morning and it was like, okay, I think I really want it. Cause I wasn't sure whether or not I wanted to do it, again. And I need a huge kick in the pants when it comes to writing. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm not sure what I'm going to write about yet. I have the romance novel stuff that we've been talking about with all the genre fiction, which would be cheating because I've already got about 9,000 words written, but I would be writing an additional 50,000. And then I've got this other just epic sort of sandbox world that I want to write stories in, but I'm a little too timid to write stories in yet, so I'm not sure I can bite that off for NaNoWriMo. But I'm definitely writing something.
And anyone else? Jim, are you partaking this year?
The last couple of days, I've been wondering what would happen if I just sat down on November 1st without having given even a moment's thought to what I'm going to do, and just seeing what happens. And that idea is very interesting to me. I don't know if it's sustainable.
Right. That was my intrigue too, is how could I sustain it because everyone else is doing it and I have to. And it would be very interesting to try that. So you think you're going to do it? I mean, this is...
I like the part where I don't think about it beforehand or do any work until I sit down. So there's an above average chance. It'll all depend on whether, you know, one of the children is sick on November 1st or something like that. You know,
so stay tuned, listeners.
That's right.
I have tried the start without knowing what you're doing thing enough to realize that I can't, that doesn't work for me. So I'd been thinking all year that I was going to plot stuff all through October and then write one in November. And my problem is that I always end up committing to short term projects during that time. So I'm on a pretty good, this is like my sixth straight writing day, and I'm just working on something that's completely for fun. But I've gotten, over the weekend I did quite a bit, and then like each of the last few weekdays I've done about 500 words. So I like having that streak going. I want to go with that into November. I'm probably not actually going to be writing a new NaNo project, but I do have a project that I want to get done this fall that I'm going to see where that goes. So November is going to be a writing month for me. I don't think it's going to be an official NaNo month for me. I will be, you know, it may be that I sit down and I discover I have enough material that I want to do that. But I think probably my plan is to just use it to sort of continue this good vibe that I've got going. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I have kind of a similar thing in that, you know, the comic book and all the stuff associated with that is just taking up a lot of my time. So I'll definitely be writing, but I unfortunately, it's weird because I think this year I really would have liked to have tried something completely new, completely separate, an entirely new set of characters, because as I said, you know, that the one I did the other year was from a character I've been writing for a while. So I really kind of want to do it, but it's just timing this year. It just won't allow me to. I have actual deadlines for the comic and things like that are just, you know, I think that's going to, I don't think I'm going to be able to do it this year, but I want to see, you know, I'd love to see what listeners do. So I really do hope that we set up, and maybe Kelly can sort of spearhead that whole thing, since she's definitely doing it, is, you know, setting up that writing buddies thing. And I'd really love to hear how people, you know, do on it and everything, because it really does amp me up. And, you know, I'm hoping that maybe once I get through some of the deadlines that maybe, you know, maybe there's something, maybe it'll inspire me to do something else. But yeah, I don't think I'm gonna be able to do it for November, unfortunately.
All right then.
So it looks like Kelly for sure, and Jim maybe. We'll wait and see.
That's right.
All right. Do we want to quickly talk about other stuff we're working on? Jim, you working on anything right now?
I'm still taking another look at the work that I showed a couple of weeks ago in the prior podcast, and for a while there, I thought it was going to be my November novel, but now I've sort of more interested in the idea of setting that aside.
Okay. All right. And Kelly, how about you?
No, I'm really looking forward to November.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So yeah, I mean, you don't really need to be on the hook for anything, because you've got, right, you're going to do this. You're committed.
Yes, I pledge 50,000 words in the month of November. That's so that fantastic. I have something to say in the middle of the next podcast.
Fantastic. Excellent. Fantastic. Caroline, so what do you have going on?
I'm kind of am where I am. I've got momentum on, I'm about finishing the thing I'm currently working on. I'm starting a longer thing. I never know exactly what form until I'm done with it. So that's like theme.
We need to have a whole conversation about that, by the way, because that blows my mind that you can do that.
They're stories, so.
Right, I know, but yeah.
but I don't think like short story, you know, that's sort of, it's just like, okay, well, we'll see what happens.
Okay, and for me, I already talked about my main thing. I mean, that's taking everything right now, because I'm in full on marketing pledge drive mode, and you know, thinking about everything to do with that. But I actually, in between that, we are scripting. We fully scripted the first two issues, and we're just working on the third, fourth, and fifth. But it's really fun, because it's a story that, to pitch it, we had to break down. So this is the story, The Demoniac of Los Angeles, which is, you know, sort of a crime, occult mystery noir story, and we had to break down the you know, how it was going to lay out, you know, and we had to break down like the five chapters and everything. But even with the breakdown, so this isn't even like I know vaguely how it's going to end, this is like we have beats, you know, in each of the chapters, and we know what's going to happen. Even within that, Jeremy and I are going back and forth with a script, and we're finding new little bits and pieces, and that's really fun. I mean, we sat there, and I was in the parking lot of a supermarket. I was going in to get groceries, but I had this idea, and I had to call him right there, and we spent probably half an hour on the phone just talking about, you know, what would happen if you could... I totally want to tell people this, but I don't want to spoil it at the same time. But, I have this character that that basically decides that she's going to design a Facebook app an application that can read all the unconscious tweets that people give out in a given radius.
Nice.
So we're kind of playing with like magic and like mobile apps. And so
right.
We're blending that for this particular character. And I thought we were having so much fun coming up with this idea that we had never stumbled across before. But we had this character that was sort of like a hacker type person, but also a magician, you know. And so we were kind of playing with what she could do. What are the different things that she might come up with? And we started playing with that. So in the middle of all of this, we're coming up with little bits of how they would, let's say, locate a person. And we're finding these little bits and just going on about it and having fun. So it's still really a blast writing like that. And you always got to find those little things or the, you know, the actual writing can become just that drudge work. But the other cool thing with a comic is that then you get to see the pages come back, and it just, you're like, wow, I didn't picture that that was going to look like that, but that's awesome. You know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so that's my main goal. So I think, let's see, should we talk about where people can find us? There's the deceptionist.org is our website, and you can feel free to leave comments there. Caroline, what's our Twitter?
@deceptionist, no the.
Right. And Kelly,
pop quiz, Hacha.
Kelly, can they find us on Facebook?
They can. I believe it is facebook.com/thedeceptionists. Maybe, or maybe just /deceptionists. I don't know. Try one, try the other.
Or they can search. Like if you search deceptionists, you're going to find us. So
hopefully.
Yeah.
We made up the word, so.
And Jim, right. If they wanted to send us an email, where would they reach us?
Is that contact@thedeceptionist.org?
It could very well
that
be.
That would be.
And if you go to The Deceptionist, you can also see links to, I think we've got links to our Twitter and stuff, right? So they can find all of us individually.
Yeah.
So sure. You can find us there. And, you know, we'll be talking about writing. And when Nano hits on November 1st, you know, everybody should be following Kelly because she's going to be off and running. And maybe right. Jim, they will have to tune in.
Oh, man.
You have to do it now. You can't let your fans down.
You versus me, Kelly.
Here's the thing. I promise you this year, I'm not going to be pregnant and flake out a week. So I'll stick with it this year.
All right. Fantastic. Okay. So I think that's our show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we will speak again soon. Bye, everybody.
Adios.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Celebration. This is no time for shaking hands. This is no time for backslapping. This is no time for marching bands. This is no time for optimism. This is no time for endless thought. This is no time for my country. Ride along, remember.